Welcome back to HN Pod, your daily audio deep dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. It is great to be with you all for episode 415. Today, we are looking back at the biggest stories from yesterday, June 2nd, 2026. We have got a really interesting mix today that perfectly captures the current mood in the tech community.
We definitely do. We are going to talk about the growing fatigue around AI features in our email, a legal showdown involving open-source hardware darling Adafruit, a deep dive into the Janet programming language, Microsoft's new coding AI model, and finally, a fascinating walking tour of surveillance infrastructure in Seattle.
Let us jump right into that first story. The post is titled, "Gmail Thinks I'm Stupid, So I Left." It got over 700 points and really struck a nerve. The author, who goes by Specs, wrote a blog post detailing their frustration with the new generative AI features in Gmail's web interface.
Right, and it's a frustration I think a lot of us are feeling lately. The author describes logging in to check feedback on a project and immediately being greeted by an AI-generated summary they did not ask for. Then, when they go to reply, there's already an AI-drafted response sitting in the text box. When they delete it to write their own, a colorful animation pops up begging them to use the Help Me Write button.
It sounds exactly like the second coming of Clippy, but somehow more passive-aggressive. The breaking point for the author was when they paused while typing and a tooltip appeared saying, "Top to improve." As the author put it, the message Google is sending is that you are not capable of reading and writing your own emails, and that you are doing something wrong by not outsourcing your communication to a token prediction machine.
That phrase, token prediction machine, really highlights the exhaustion people are feeling. The author had their Gmail account for 16 years, and this was enough to make them pack up and leave for Fastmail, using a custom domain. And looking at the Hacker News comments, they are absolutely not alone. There's a massive wave of praise for Fastmail in the thread.
Yeah, one commenter mentioned how they migrated 22 years of emails to Fastmail in about 30 hours, with zero hassle. They pointed out how much faster the interface is because it doesn't bother with heavy animations or constant pop-ups trying to upsell you on AI features. It just does email.
But it is not a completely one-sided debate. Some users pointed out that they really miss Gmail's automatic tab categorization for things like promotions and updates. The catch, though, as another user highlighted, is that to keep those automatic categorization features enabled in Gmail now, you also have to keep the intrusive AI writing tools turned on. They are bundled together.
Which feels like a very intentional choice by Google to inflate usage metrics for their language models. It is a classic case of user-hostile design. Some folks in the comments advocated for moving back to dedicated desktop email clients like Thunderbird, OppoMail, or Spark to avoid web interfaces entirely. It really feels like we are seeing a renaissance of people wanting dumb, fast, reliable software.
Speaking of reliable hardware and software, our next story is a bit of a drama in the maker community. The title is Adafruit Receives Demand Letter from Fenwick Legal Counsel on Behalf of Flux AI. This one pulled in over 600 points.
For those who might not know, Adafruit is an absolute pillar of the open source hardware and maker community. They sell electronics components, but they are most famous for their incredibly high quality tutorials and documentation. So it was a shock to see them post that they received a legal demand letter from a major law firm representing a startup called Flux AI.
Flux is a browser-based AI tool for designing printed circuit boards. According to Adafruit's brief blog post, Flux's lawyers demanded that Adafruit stop publishing an article that allegedly contained false claims about Flux's intellectual property and user base. The letter even threw in threats under the
"No, it was not." One user described spending nearly $100 in AI tokens just trying to get a few simple components placed on a schematic, and the results were terrible. Another user mentioned setting up a meeting with Flux's founder after a bad experience, only to be ghosted. The general consensus in the comments was disappointment that a startup would resort to expensive lawfare instead of just fixing their product and securing their servers.
It is a stark reminder that in the developer tool space, community goodwill is your most valuable asset. Once you start sending demand letters to beloved figures like Adafruit, it is very hard to win that trust back.
Let us transition from AI hardware design to AI software design. Our third story is an announcement from Microsoft AI titled Introducing MAI Code OneFlash. This one got around 400 points.
Microsoft is rolling out this new model directly to GitHub Copilot individual users in Visual Studio Code. The pitch is that it is built for fast, efficient assistance in everyday developer workflows. Microsoft claims it outperforms Claude Haiku 4.5 across coding benchmarks, and that it is designed to be adaptive, staying concise for simple requests and spending more reasoning budget on complex tasks.
They also emphasize that it was trained specifically on GitHub Copilot harnesses used in production, rather than just optimizing for standard benchmarks. They claim it solves harder problems using up to 60% fewer tokens, which obviously reduces latency and cost.
But Hacker News readers are a tough crowd, and they immediately started digging into the technical paper. The biggest sticking point? The model card reveals this is a 137 billion parameter model.
Right, which completely undercuts the Flash naming convention. As one commenter pointed out, a 137 billion parameter model is massive. It is not a lightweight 5 billion parameter model like the name implies.
Exactly. And the community was quick to point out that comparing a 137 billion parameter model to Claude Haiku 4.5 is a really weird flex. Haiku is Anthropic's smallest, cheapest model. Users noted that open weights models like Qwen 3.6 at just 35 billion parameters are getting nearly identical scores on the Sweat Bench Pro evaluations.
There is also a lot of frustration bubbling up in the comments about GitHub Copilot itself. Several users mentioned that they recently canceled their Copilot subscriptions because GitHub changed their pricing model from per request to a per token quota system, making it significantly more expensive for heavy users.
Yeah, we are seeing a real shift in loyalty. People in the thread were talking about migrating to DeepSeek Flash or paying for Codex directly. It feels like the honeymoon phase of AI coding assistance is over, and developers are now hyper-focused on cost, speed, and whether these models are actually saving them time or just generating code they have to painstakingly review.
Speaking of writing code, let us cleanse the palate with a story about a programming language people actually write by hand. Our next post is from 2023, titled Why Janet? It climbed to over 400 points yesterday.
This is a beautiful, passionate blog post by Ian Henry about why he loves a little Lisp dialect called Janet. He actually wrote an entire free book about it. He pitches Janet as having the simplicity of JavaScript, but with value types and without all the weird quirks.
What really caught my eye is how distributable it is. Janet compiles itself to bytecode, writes that into a C file, and then compiles that into a native, standalone executable. A simple Hello World binary is under a megabyte and includes the full runtime and garbage collector. That makes it incredible for writing fast little command line tools.
The author also raves about how Janet handles text. Instead of regular expressions, which we all know can become unreadable nightmares, Janet uses parsing expression grammars, or PEGs. They are structured, composable, and can handle multi-line text, HTML, and even binary formats without choking.
And because it is a Lisp, you get macros. But Ian points out a really unique feature. Janet lets you pass values from compile time to runtime. When you compile a Janet program, it runs the top-level instructions and then takes a snapshot of the program state to disk. So you can do things like pre-compute heavy assets or read files at compile time, and they are just baked into your final binary.
The Hacker News comments were full of fellow language nerds appreciating the design. Though, to be fair, some users pointed out the pain points of adopting a niche language. The biggest complaints were the lack of a robust package management versioning system and a sparse standard library for things like advanced HTTP routing.
That is always the trade-off, right? You get a beautiful, elegant language, but you have to build a lot of the plumbing yourself. The comments also brought up Fennel, which is another Lisp dialect that compiles to Lua. It sparked a really deep technical debate about the performance of LuaJIT versus the SBCL compiler for Common Lisp. It is exactly the kind of deep-in-the-weeds programming language theory that Hacker News absolutely loves.
It really is. All right, let us move to our final story for today. It is a piece from 2020 that resurfaced, titled A Walking Tour of Surveillance Infrastructure in Seattle. It gathered nearly 400 points.
This is a fascinating concept. It is a literal field guide created by the Tech Equity Coalition to help people spot the layers of the smart city that are hidden in plain sight. The tour covers a 1.3-mile route through downtown Seattle, pointing out different types of data collection happening all around us.
They start with the obvious ones, like surveillance cameras on street poles and buildings, noting how they enforce social agreements about what is considered normal behavior.
But then they point out things you might not think of as surveillance, like Amazon Go convenience stores.
Right, the cashierless stores. The guide points out that the overhead cameras track your precise movements and browsing habits. They can correlate what you look at in the physical store with your online Amazon profile, building incredibly detailed predictive models about your health, religion, or lifestyle based on your diet.
The tour also highlights automated license plate readers, or ALPRs. These are mounted on highway overpasses and police cars. The guide notes that the Seattle Department of Transportation collects 13.5 million license plate scans a year. And because regulations are so loose, that data is often shared across agencies or sold to private databases. It is a perfect example of scope creep, where data collected for traffic estimates ends up being used for targeted advertising or private investigation.
What's really interesting is how the Hacker News discussion evolved. While the article is about the privacy implications of surveillance, the comments almost immediately pivoted to a massive debate about crime in Seattle and the effectiveness of the justice system.
Yeah, one of the top comments was from a user whose car was stolen. The police found the car, the thief was in it with a weapon and his work uniform, and they had a witness. But the prosecutors declined to press charges because they did not have direct video evidence of the actual theft occurring. The commenter argued that juries have become so conditioned to expect video evidence that cases get dropped without it.
That sparked a huge thread about the purpose of all this surveillance. If cities are collecting massive amounts of data, but prosecutors are using diversion programs or dropping charges due to lack of resources, what is the point of the surveillance infrastructure?
It turned into a classic Hacker News debate, pitting statistics against anecdotes. Some users pointed out that macro-level data shows crime is generally on the decline nationwide, but others argued that statistics do not capture the reality on the ground if crimes are no longer being reported or prosecuted. It highlights a really tough civic tension. We are giving up more and more privacy to smart city tech, but many people feel less safe than before.
It is a complex issue with no easy answers. But it is exactly why these kinds of walking tours are so important. They make the invisible infrastructure visible, so we can actually have informed debates about what we are trading our privacy for.
Absolutely. Well, that brings us to the end of today's episode. From AI burnout in our inboxes to Lisp dialects and city surveillance, it has been a packed show.
Thank you all so much for tuning in to HN Pod. If you enjoyed the conversation, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
We will be back tomorrow with another breakdown of the top stories from Hacker News. Until then, happy coding and keep building.